I will open the Senate Committee on Rules for April 10th, 2009. We do not have a quorum present, but I'm going to open in hearing only at this point for HB 2466. Will the committee administrator give a brief report?
Yes, House Bill 2466 will require that administrative rule review reports are considered by interim committees with subject matter jurisdiction over that state agency's area of responsibility rather than by the Legislative Council Committee. It also requires Legislative Council to develop a list of state agencies with areas of responsibility primarily within subject matter jurisdiction of interim committees and to assign all state agencies to at least one interim committee for rule review. You also have dash one amendments proposed by Senator Ferrioli's office.
Okay. Mr. Johnson, if you would please come forward and identify yourself for the record. And before you start, just for the committee, I think everyone knows, but Ms. Kelsey McCulley, that's at the right-hand corner here, is an intern in my office today. She's shadowing me at this meeting, and she is the daughter of Jim McCulley from Washington County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And House Bill 2466 is a bill that essentially continues a process that was first started in the early 1960s when the Office of Legislative Counsel, at the request of the Legislative Assembly, began reviewing state agency rules to ensure that those rules were within the scope of statutory authority and didn't otherwise have some kind of constitutional problem. That process is continued, but historically, when the Office of Legislative Counsel identified a problem with a rule, the office would prepare a report and present that to the Legislative Council Committee, which and the state agency that adopted the rule would typically present their side of the rule as well, and then the Legislative Council Committee would determine whether it agreed with the offices of Legislative Council's findings or not, and if it did so, it adopted those findings. That, of course, didn't void the rule. This is essentially an information-only process. The Constitution would prohibit a body of the Legislative Assembly from voiding rules. They can only act through statutory changes that would override the rules. So this bill changes one key component of that process, and that is the committee to which adverse rule findings would be considered. Instead of the Legislative Council Committee, it would be actually a substantive interim committee of the Legislative Assembly that would consider adverse rule reports. The interim committee would be one that typically hears a lot of program reports and develops new programs for the state agency. So this bill, which was actually prepared at the request of legislative leadership, would create more of a loop, a feedback loop between committees that propose new programs for state agencies and the agencies then implementing that program through the adoption of rules. That is the objective of this bill and how the significant change that this bill makes from existing process.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. With that, I will close the public hearing on HB 2466. Senator Ferrioli, is there a motion?
We're not in work session yet.
Oh, I'll open the work session on HB 2466.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I had a question for the Chief Counsel, if he doesn't
mind. Okay, Mr. Johnson, if you'd please come back and identify yourself again for the record.
Dexter Johnson, Legislative Counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I had an opportunity to have a conversation with the Chief of Council on the question of rules and who should be in charge of those determinations as to whether or not they fit the legislative intent. And I guess the only question I'd like to ask for the record is whether or not we're not creating a situation where the folks that authored the enabling legislation are now, you know, put in a position to review the rules, and whether or not that concentrates administrative and executive power, or executive power and legislative power in the same body.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, the committee members that considered changes to a program, statutory changes to a program, or developed a new statutory program, would then serve on the interim committee for which, if there was a finding on the part of our office that the rule didn't comply with the statute, it would be heard by at least the same committee. Interim committee membership, of course, as you all know, is a little bit different than regular session membership, but there would be some overlap there.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. In the draft that we're looking at, the Legislative Council could receive...
Senator Ferrioli,
yes.
Just for the sake of... We were in work session. I was just getting a clarification, but since the discussion's going on a little bit longer, I'm going to reopen the public hearing, too, in case anybody else wants to comment.
All right, thanks, Mr. Chairman. A written request by a citizen could initiate a rule review by the Legislative Council, and if it determined that the... the person affected had raised a valid point, then the Legislative Council would prepare a written report and refer that back to the Committee of Jurisdiction. And that's sort of the way we get into this question about whether or not the rule fits the legislative intent. Can the committee initiate its own review?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, yes, the committee can, and any individual legislator can that is under existing law, and this bill does not change that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So we're still under hearing. Is there any additional questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. I will close the hearing again. We open the work session. Is there a motion on HB 2466?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the -1 amendments to HB 2466.
Okay. The -1 amendments have been moved. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion. Any objection? Hearing no objection. Motion passes.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2466 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved to move House Bill 2466 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing no objection, motion passes. Senator Ferrioli, will you carry?
I will, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Before we go on to the next bill, can the committee administrator check with the president's office? So they're supposed to be here in like a minute.
Yeah. Supposed to be what?
For the LFO commemoration.
Oh.
I don't want to start into... the next bill may take a little bit more time.
Chair, I'm sorry I'm late. Did we do 778 already?
No, we've only done one bill.
Okay.
Only one bill. We'll be at ease for just a few moments. Thank you.
Come over here.
Oh, for picture.
Oh, okay. Picture.
This is real informal.
Mr. Chair, who's our new committee member?
Just appointed.
We waited for you, and we just achieved it now as you.
He's new authority of the committee. This is, again, Kelsey McCulley. She is an intern in my office and shadowing me for some of the meetings today, and she's the daughter of Jim McCulley from Washington County.
The president should be on his way.
Okay. We'll just be at ease for a moment. Previous bill, we did have a fiscal emergency. Just for the sake of the record, the previous bill, we did have a legislative fiscal and a legislative revenue statement. The only one we don't
change
have
anybody's
one
salary and
compensation.
We'll make any amendments. You know, look that over, see if you. Mm-hmm. I think the treasurer's worth $72,000. What do you think?
Yes, it says.
Yeah. Attorney General gets $5,000 more. I don't know what that means.
There she is.
Okay. We will get started. Okay. We were at ease. We'll come back into order. I will open a hearing on SJR 34. Will the committee administrator give a brief overview?
Yes, SJR 34 commemorates the legislative fiscal office for 50 years of service. We do have statements of no revenue and no fiscal impact.
Okay. Senator Courtney and Senator Carter, would you both come forward? And as soon as the speaker arrives, we'll bring him to the dais also.
Oh, all the big guns, huh?
Good morning. I don't know why I couldn't come up by myself.
Speaker Hunt?
Maybe I want to go.
We've had some new firepower. There are going to be tough questions here.
What are you doing here?
I was invited.
Senator Courtney, Ms. President, I'll ask you to start.
I suppose I don't want to.
I'm the female here.
I like
both of them should have better manners.
Well, for the sake of the good order of this committee and for the sake that we do not like that much argumentation in this committee, we'll let you decide amongst yourselves, and you have 30 seconds for one of you to start.
Mr. Chairman, I think you should open a hearing on Senate Bill 778 as long as we have all of those that had a personal conflict here in the room.
Senator Farioli, we just haven't opened a hearing only on SJR 34.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, so much for having me. And since these two have me in doing another job, I appreciate very much having the opportunity to go first. My name is Margaret Carter, Service Senator from District 22 in North Northeast Portland. Thank you for having this bill before you today, because each session I see us honoring citizens from every walk of life, and we commemorate all kind of deeds on the floor of both of these bodies, and we celebrate our histories and take time to spotlight the work and lives of others. But we never take time to really look at the history and the good works of those who work with us daily. So I speak today about the Legislative Fiscal Office and what I consider an extraordinary staff who collectively each have the opportunity to serve and work for a body of 90 people that probably run their nerves to the very end, and doing all kind of late hours, 7 days a week. They're always on notice about work, and it's nothing for them to work 13, 14 hours a day. This is what I call extraordinary public service and uncommon common sense and dedication of the hallmark of a staff that gives unendingly and untiringly to this body of 90 people. They work very, very long hours. They are meticulous in detail. And at every turn that they are needed to stop doing what they're doing, to answer to the two of these people here, as well as each of the 90 members of the body, they're there helping in what may be our most difficult task, and that is a balanced budget with limited resources. And many times I don't think that we appreciate that to the degree that we should, because even in this year since last September, we've lost a third of our budget. We have gone from $15.5 billion to $11.7 billion. And yet we have to try to sit down and collaborate with each other to try to make sure that we serve the people of Oregon well, and these people are untiring in their efforts. So when we look at the non-partisan, bicameral, unifying, on task and on time, legislative fiscal works timelessly, like a Swiss watch, with the infinite grace of Italian design now for a half century. And I want to be able to be a part of saying thank you to them and thank you to this body for seeing the need for having fiscal integrity in that way. I consider them people with exceptional service as the norm and professionalism as the standard. I am honored to join the two people that are flanking me as a chief sponsor, and I am honored to recommend Senate Joint Resolution 34 to you today, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, and members of the committee.
Thank you very much, Senator Carter. We will go to the other two parties to testify before we go to questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Speaker?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Dave Hunt. I actually don't think I fully appreciated the role, the important role, the effective role that Legislative Fiscal Office played until the last few months serving in this role that I have. The statements they issue, I was always very tuned in to how much we all rely on the statements they issue and the analysis and the information. But the advice on every single bill, the fact that they're not just looking at the bills that come down to the Ways and Means Committee, the fact that they are taking a look at pretty much every single bill that comes into this process, those that are in the committee, obviously, this session, because of the way we've changed the process, they are looking and having to do fiscal statements for bills before they get out of policy committees, which is a whole new dimension, which they have really added on a workload. Hopefully it's more fronting their work, not just adding new work, but have accepted this new major change in their process and workload in the early part of the session with great grace and acceptance. And the counsel that they preside, that they provide to the presiding officers and to the whole body, is just really, really critical. And I can't say enough good things about them. Celebrating 50 years, I think, is a very historic time. I'm glad, Mr. Chair, that you've anointed a new member of your committee here, so I'm not the only one here who's been around for less than Legislative Fiscal Service.
Senator Courtney, so that everybody knows here, this will be the third time I've announced this. This is Kelsey McCulley. She's an intern in my office today, and she's shadowing me today. It's been joked that I've appointed her a new member of the Senate, but no one has given me that authority yet. Senator Courtney?
thank you, Senator Devlin. My name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, North in Salem. I'm a state senator, District 11. Chair Devlin, Vice Chair Ferrelli, Senator Metzger, Senator Burdick, and Lisa Nuss, the committee administrator, and Kelly. As you know, SJR 434 commemorates the legislative fiscal officer on 50 years of service to the legislature. The Oregon Constitution authorizes and requires the legislature to create and to balance a state budget. I simply do not know how we could do this without LFO, and I don't know how it was done during the 100 years before there was an LFO office. In 1959, the legislature came to its senses, I'm going to correct my testimony as I go here, came to its senses and passed Senate Bill 18, part of which states the role of LFO is to ascertain facts and make recommendations, that's a quote, unquote, quote, 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 about the governor's budget, state expenditures, and fiscal implementations. In addition to these duties, LFO was directed to perform the task of what is now the Legislative Revenue Office as well, and to oversee, corrections, both size of our budgetary transactions for 16 years until LRO was established. When LRO was created, it received an annual budget of $60,000 and one financial officer who was allowed to employ such professional assistants and clerical and other employees as he or she finds necessary for the effective conduct of the work under his charge. At that time, it was all his and he. So I have to say it should have been her, but it is today his and her. The Oregon Legislature has been served over the years by seven legislative fiscal officers, from Kenneth Bragg, the number one person, first officer, to Ken Rocco, our present LFO officer. Today, LFO operates with a staff of over 25 analysts and support team members. Together, they have 150 years of service to the legislature. Ken Rocco is one of the two longest-serving members of that team. He and Robin Lamont both started in October of 1990. Please join me in honoring LFO for 50 years of dedicated service and long hours of painstaking work, often unmentioned and behind the scenes, but always, always appreciated. Thank you for allowing me to come here today and testify on SJR 34.
Thank you. This is a serious occasion, very serious occasion, honoring people who have done a great deal of work both in this session and in many sessions in the past. But if there are any questions for the parties that have come to testify, now would be the time to ask them. Okay. I did want to say also being a very serious issue, I'm always astounded actually by the energy that members have as they come into this building, because I'm always surprised about how much energy they have. But I'm even more astounded by the work that all the people do that serve us, both legislative fiscal, legislative revenue, legislative council, and actually all of the committee staff too, and the other people in the building, because it's incredibly hard work for everybody, and I think they come to it every day with an energy that's admirable. Thank you all very much. I will actually, Representative Hunt, if we take action on this, which I presume we will, I assume you want to carry in the House.
I will leave that up to the committee, our parallel committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, I will close the public hearing, open a work session on SJR 34. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move SJR 34 to the House with a due pass recommendation, okay. To the Senate chamber with a due pass.
I move it to the House, too. Won't get it passed in the Senate.
I got a little bit ahead of myself, too, but...
I was thinking I was carrying it in our chamber.
I was thinking I was back on Ways and Means.
Let me restate my motion, Mr. Chair. I move SJR 34 to the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. SJR 34 has been moved to this Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, motion passes. Could the committee administrator please contact the Senate President's office and see if he or Senator Carter would want to carry? If they do not, then I'll designate a member of the committee to carry.
Okay.
I will open a public hearing on SB 778. Will the committee administrator please give a brief overview?
Senate Bill 778 establishes fixed levels of salary for statewide elected officials. It also establishes salary for the members of the Legislative Assembly, and it changes the duties of the Public Officials Compensation Commission. You have testimony in your packets submitted by the League of Women Voters.
Okay. Before we start on this, I think we should probably all do this now, and if we want to do it individually, that's fine. This particular bill will actually restrict our own salary. So I think that for the record, I announce as we have this public hearing that I do have a potential conflict of interest.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Could I actually clarify? As members of a class, individual legislators do not have a conflict.
Okay.
However, the majority leader and the minority leader do have a direct conflict because they are individually mentioned in this bill.
Yes.
And they are individually targeted in this bill for reductions of salary.
Okay.
So I also have a conflict of interest.
You will not be voting on this bill today because we do not have a fiscal, however, so I just want to put it on the record and we'll get that clarified.
Okay, Mr. Chair, just to further clarify, I believe under the rules, the proper time to declare the conflict is before you vote.
Yes. I just wanted to make it clear from the very beginning.
From the very beginning.
You guys are very conflicted.
And Mr. Chair, I'm so sorry that the other members of the legislature who were present here just seconds ago, who are specifically mentioned in this bill, are not going to be here for the public hearing.
Okay. We do have a public hearing now for 778. Will you give a brief overview?
Oh,
just that brief. Okay. No, we'll go to directly to the public. We're in the public hearing. Mr. Nelson, will you come forward? Now, as I indicated before, we do not have a legislative fiscal statement yet for this bill, so we will not be taking action today.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Oregon Judges Association. In 2005-2007 interim, as you will remember, we had a task force on the legislature. We worked very closely with the Senate President's office in that process to create what we called the Public Official Compensation Commission, which then went before the 2007 legislative session, which you did approve. In that process, the bill laid out for the commission a process for them to come to be appointed, and we did appoint. There are a number of individuals that were appointed, and some were chosen at lot from each congressional district. They did come together during the interim, starting in September, and completed August and September, completed their work and made the recommendation to the legislature, which included salary increases for state elected officials, including legislators. A particular side note, I think the process by which they identified the proper amount for legislators, I don't think that process probably worked particularly well. I personally believe that legislative salaries should be substantially higher than what they are, as I also believe state elected officials' salaries should be more than what they are. But the good news and the bad news, the good news being is I think that was a very successful overall process. The actual individuals that were chosen by lot, I think if you talk to the other appointed officials, you will hear that they did an excellent job and they were they're very thorough in what they did do. The bad news is the bottom, of course, has fallen out of the economy since November. The governor has announced that there will not be any COLAs or any step increases for state employees, and I think this body and my client would agree that this is not the time for public officials to receive increases in salary compensation. So there will be no public official compensation for the 2009-11 process. The need for this bill is that in setting up the commission, we also, in effect, sunsetted June 30th all the other statutory provisions that set salaries, including legislator salaries. If we don't do something now, there will be no legal authority to pay legislators after July 1, and that's why the bill is here before you. Our concern in the bill is on page 2, lines 10 and 14, through 14 in the Public Officials Compensation Legislation 2007. We disconnected the tie between judges' salaries and legislators' salaries. And it was either the maximum, the greater of the maximum salary range 1 of the Management Service Compensation Plan, for legislators, or 17% of the salary of a circuit court judge. Having been involved in judges' salaries for some time, I think all of you know, and the process has sometimes been difficult because of this tie. It's difficult for legislators to look at increasing salaries for judges when, in fact, they may be, depending upon which of these two are greater, in voting to increase the salaries for themselves. And that has always made a difficult process here. We welcomed, of course, this disconnect that took place. I think in putting this bill together, I think the need was, the thinking was, we need just to go back to where we were and to create, in effect, the same system. But that brings us back to the reconnect. Obviously, we would prefer that that there isn't this connect again. That there is just a reference to either to range one or some other mechanism for identifying legislator salaries. At the same time, we look forward to the commission being able to come up with recommendations on legislative salaries that also take it out of the political process. We also had a question on page 3, and I don't know if council is here or not.
They are.
As to lines 29 through 34, if there was a reason for the removal of the timelines to the commission to do their work. Quite frankly, this thing was set up to allow the commission to do their work and to report it really after the November election, so that it wasn't really a part of that whole political process, and that we thought the timeline was actually quite good, but there may be another reason why this was removed. We think that's helpful to give direction to the commission. Again, we respectfully would like to ask to remain disconnected. At the same time, are supportive, very supportive of the Public Officials Compensation Commission and their effort to try to move public official salaries forward. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Nelson, and then I'll get Mr. Rutlinger up. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Rutlinger, could you answer the question that was asked about that particular section? I believe it's lines, let's say lines 29 through. Please identify yourself for the record, and obviously I think everybody here on the committee would be aware of this, but if you have future questions on the bill in terms of the drafting of Mr. Rutlinger, would be who you would
address him to.
To whom you would address. I know you're an English major.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members, Ted Reutlinger from the Legislative Council's office. I believe the question was why in Section 7 on page 3 the bill deletes the timeline for the commission. I think the answer to the question is that, as Mr. Nelson pointed out, what this bill does is restore the law to the shape it took before Senate Bill 700 passed last session. And so I think that in drafting this bill, that's what happened. We took out the stuff from Senate Bill 700 and put the law back closely to the provisions that existed before that bill took effect. So clearly, if you decided that you'd like those time frames, we could easily restore those by amendment.
Okay. We will look at that issue. Any questions for Mr. Rutlinger? Yes, Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rutlinger, there's a little tagline on the compensations on page 1 from 19 through 29 underneath the stated compensations, and then it wraps over to the page 2 from line 1 to line 3. Actually it goes down to line 6. Every elected official, it looks like, other than the governor, gets $250 for necessary expenses. Does anybody account for those expenses, or are they just added assumptively?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ferrioli, unfortunately, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay.
We can find out.
We
for
can
you.
Research okay. it. I'm going to guess just an assumptive. And then, similarly, the governor's given an additional $1,000 for expenses per month. And I just wondered, was that just something that was sort of arcane? It was carried over because we've always done it that way? I mean, typically expenses are reimbursed, and there may be a reimbursement in addition to these expenses, because trust me, no statewide elected official operates on $250 a month to cover their reasonable and necessary expenses. So it would seem to me it rather duplicative if we're just giving them $250 but processing their expense vouchers every month. You know, why do we need to do the $250 if we're going to pay their actual and reasonable expenses? So that would be a question I'd like you to be prepared to delve into at some point.
Yeah, certainly. Mr. Chair, Senator Perioli, again, this is a language that has been in the law for a long time, and when we prepared this bill, we simply put it back to the way it was. So.
Okay. Any additional questions?
Just a comment.
Yes.
In sensitivity to the previous testimony, I think that we saw judges' salaries flattened for decades because of the tie to legislator salaries. And, you know, we, at least we're able to sort of let that bird fly free for enough time to raise the judge's salaries. Now we're rehooking up to them. So, you know, okay. I do think that there's some accuracy to the statement that judges suffered by their association with legislators. I think they would argue that that's true also.
I think the association would be maybe how you characterize it. I don't think Mr. Nelson would characterize it that way. Mr. Rutlinger, I think Senator Metzger may have a question.
I think I'll just pass on it this time. I was going to respond to the senator, but I'll pass.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Rutlinger. Take it in the hallway, Senator.
Before we close the public hearing on this, I did want to state for the record, I know that there are some people that disagreed with the recommendations of the Public Officials Compensation Commission, but the people on that commission worked very hard to come forward with those recommendations, and I think their work is appreciated. Obviously, they've made recommendations for judges, for statewides, and for legislators. And people can always disagree on practically anything in the legislature or elsewhere. But I think there's been a discussion with all members about this bill, and I think the people seeing that the state is currently with our last forecast, $3.1 billion away from adequately funding services, and we are projecting that we could be as far as 4.4, maybe even $5 billion away from projecting services, that now was not the time to make adjustments in legislators or statewide salaries or additional adjustments in judges' salaries at this time. Just wanted to put that on the record. Any additional testimony? Then I'll close the public hearing, and we adjourn for today.
Same stuff, huh?
Yeah.